The van sat alone beneath a Wyoming sky, its white panels dull against the dust and the wind that scraped through the sagebrush. No movement. No sound. Just the slow roll of clouds and the camera of a passing hiker capturing a moment that would later freeze a nation in shock. Days earlier, Gabby Petito's online world had been all warmth and light, national parks, open roads, laughter with the man she called her fiancé. Their faces filled screens everywhere, the perfect image of freedom. Then the upload stopped. The smiles disappeared. When police in Florida took the missing person report, the timeline had already started to fracture. One vehicle. Two names. Only one returned. From that still van in the desert to the crowded press briefings on opposite coasts, the story that followed became both an investigation and a mirror into how obsession, control, and performance could unfold in real time before millions of watching eyes. Chapter 1. The Van in the Desert. The light was beginning to fade over Spread Creek in the Bridger, Teton National Forest, the kind of blue dusk that drains color from everything. A white Ford Transit van sat pulled off a dirt track near the cottonwoods, its side door half open. Inside were a few belongings, sleeping mats, cooking gear, a half-folded blanket, things that said someone had been here not long ago. But no one was moving. A pair of weekend campers noticed it first. They filmed the van as they passed, unaware they were capturing the last known scene of Gabby Petito's life. Days later, detectives would return to that footage, pausing frame by frame, searching for anything out of place. In Florida, on the morning of August 29, 2021, Gabby's mother received a message that felt wrong. It sounded like her daughter, but too short, too formal. She tried calling back. No answer. A second day went by. Then a third. Panic crept in, small at first, then relentless. By September 11th, she dialed police. The missing person report was logged at 6:55 p.m. The story that had looked like a young couple chasing adventure across America suddenly twisted into something else. A disappearance that stretched from Florida to the high plains of Wyoming. Investigators began the way they always do. Timeline, phone records, location data. Gabby and Brian Laundrie had set off in early July, driving north from Blue Point, New York, through Colorado, Utah, and on toward Wyoming. Their social media pages told one version of events, perfectly lit photos, soft music under travel montages. But beneath that, police would soon find fragments of another story, recorded by chance on an officer's body camera. August 12th, Moab, Utah. A call to dispatch reported a man slapping a woman near a grocery store. When officers found the van, it was pulled over on the side of the highway. The camera footage showed Gabby sitting in the passenger seat, tearful, apologizing. Brian, outside the van, tried to explain. Stress, long days on the road, no space to breathe. Both said it wasn't violent, just a fight between people under pressure. Police separated them for the night. Gabby stayed in the van, Brian at a motel. The report described emotional strain, not assault. To officers, the situation looked temporary. But the footage later felt like a premonition. Two people caught between love and collapse, performing calm while something deeper was breaking. Weeks passed. They visited Arches National Park, then Grand Teton. Posts continued, sunset shots, smiling faces, but followers noticed the captions felt off. Shorter. Colder. On August 27th, the upload stopped altogether. That same day, a restaurant manager in Jackson remembered a couple arguing loudly over a bill. She recognized them later from the news. He was angry, restless. She looked scared, trying to calm him. They left separately. When Gabby's parents called Brian and his family after she went silent, no one answered. Then came the shock. On September 1st, the white van rolled back into Northport, Florida. Brian was driving it alone. Neighbors saw him unpacking, mowing the lawn, acting normal. The van sat in the driveway for days while Gabby's family begged for information. On paper, she was missing. In reality, investigators still had almost nothing. No crime scene, no body, no confession. Only an absence. Detectives traced her phone pings through Wyoming, last active near Spread Creek on August 27th. The area was rugged, isolated, and large enough to swallow mistakes. Search teams started to grid the land. Drones mapped the creek bed. Volunteers combed the roadside ditches. Each new day drew more attention. News trucks gathered outside the laundry home. Reporters shouted questions from the sidewalk. Social media feeds filled with theories, maps, and amateur sleuths comparing satellite photos. What began as a missing person alert had become a digital spectacle. At the heart of it were two families, one begging for help, the other staying silent on legal advice. The silence felt heavy, accusatory. Every word, or lack of one, became evidence in the court of public opinion. Behind closed doors, detectives were filing subpoenas, requesting data from Google, Verizon, Instagram. They wanted the trail of location pings that could stitch the journey together, where the van stopped, when phones went dark, and if anyone else was near. In early September, the FBI joined the case. Coordination meetings stretched late into the night. The decision was made to focus the physical search in Wyoming while monitoring laundry in Florida. When agents tried to question him, his parents handed over their attorney's card. By then, Gabby had been missing over 2 weeks. The investigation shifted again when those campers came forward, the ones who had filmed the white van near Spread Creek. The footage was grainy but clear enough to confirm the plate. It placed the vehicle there on the evening of August 27th, matching the final phone data point. Search teams re-entered the area at dawn. Helicopters swept overhead. On the ground, agents walked shoulder to shoulder, methodical and silent. The landscape felt endless, fields of sage, rock, and wind. One officer later said the hardest part wasn't the terrain. It was the quiet. In Florida, protesters gathered outside the laundry home, chanting for answers. Inside, Brian had stopped speaking to anyone. A week later, he too vanished, telling his family he was going for a hike in the Carlton Reserve. They reported him missing 3 days after he left. Now there were two searches, one in the wetlands of Florida, one in the mountains of Wyoming, mirroring each other like halves of a story that refused to meet. The missing person case was now officially a criminal investigation. Warrants were issued for devices, storage drives, and the van itself. Forensic teams dusted the interior, swabbed handles, searched for biological traces. Each test returned partial clues, fibers, fingerprints, soil samples. Nothing yet definitive. Still, the pattern was emerging, an escalating tension that had moved across thousands of miles until it ended in silence. Investigators only needed to find where that silence began. That night, as the search crews camped at Spread Creek, the temperature dropped below freezing. The mountains stood black against the stars. Somewhere within that silence, the answer was waiting. Chapter 2. The Search in the Spotlight. Morning came with the hum of generators and the low chatter of search crews. The Bridger, Teton air was thin and cold. Agents from local law enforcement, park rangers, and the FBI set up a command tent near the creek bed where the van had been spotted. Maps were pinned to the canvas walls, topographic lines, drone photos, GPS grids. Each red circle marked a zone already cleared, each yellow mark, a zone still unknown. The work began quietly. Volunteers trudged through mud and willow thickets, careful not to disturb evidence. Dogs strained against their handlers' leashes. Every few minutes, someone radioed in a set of coordinates. Nothing yet. The wind was picking up again. From the air, the valley looked peaceful. From the ground, it was a thousand small movements of people searching for what no one wanted to find. As the manhunt spread, so did the story. By mid-September 2021, Gabby Petito's name was everywhere. On national broadcasts, in online forums, and across social platforms where millions of strangers picked apart her final days frame by frame. Her smile, once the symbol of a travel dream, became evidence. Clips from her van life vlog resurfaced hourly. People slowed the footage to catch the slightest change in tone, a glance, a word. In chat rooms, users built digital maps of the couple's route, marking possible stops and time gaps. The case had entered a new kind of investigation, half police work, half crowdsourced obsession. Every update fed the cycle. The more attention it drew, the louder the speculation became. But for the agents on the ground, each minute online was time slipping away in the field. September 14th, Northport, Florida. The laundry house was surrounded by reporters. Police cruisers idled at the corner. Through drawn blinds, there was no sign of Brian. His parents said he'd gone hiking in the Carlton Reserve 3 days earlier and hadn't returned. The reserve stretched over 25,000 acres, wetlands, gators, knee-deep water, and dense brush. Searching it was nearly impossible. Inside the command center, detectives compared timelines. The van's return to Florida on September 1st, Gabby's last contact in late August, Brian's disappearance on September 14th. Somewhere between those dates, the truth had hardened into something irreversible. Public pressure grew by the hour. Commentators debated whether the Laundries were hiding something or protecting their son. The phrase "person of interest" appeared in headlines, but not suspect. Legal boundaries were tight. There was still no confirmed crime, only absence and silence. The FBI served a search warrant on the Laundrie home. Agents carried out computers, storage devices, and personal journals. They impounded the van for forensic processing. Under ultraviolet light, they dusted for prints and tested for blood trace. Luminol revealed faint patterns, but not enough to identify. Analysts logged every fragment for comparison with samples still coming from Wyoming. Back west, the Wyoming search entered its third week. The terrain changed by the hour, marsh in the morning, cracked soil by afternoon. Investigators divided into sectors, each mapped to a GPS device that logged movement. At night, they reviewed the tracks, looking for blind spots. It was the kind of case that wore people down. Hours of walking under open sky, knowing what you might find if luck turned cruel. Then a break. A hiker had come forward with footage from his dashcam, taken the same day the first campers filmed the van. The timestamp aligned with Gabby's last known phone signal. In the video, a figure could be seen near the creek, small against the landscape. Investigators couldn't confirm identity, but it narrowed the search to a precise quadrant, a 500-yard stretch along the creek's north edge. The next morning, they focused there. While the search intensified, the internet's second investigation kept expanding. True crime podcasts uploaded nightly episodes. YouTube analysts overlaid timelines with GPS data. On TikTok, users staged emotional reenactments, narrating theories through tears. It became more than coverage, it became theater. And yet, buried inside that noise, a few key leads surfaced. Eyewitness reports of the couple arguing in Jackson, credit card transactions linked to Brian's name, and a store receipt that placed him alone days later. Investigators filtered each tip, verifying what they could. Digital forensics, not guesswork, would break this case. By September 17th, agents cross-checked phone records with banking activity. One pattern stood out, a withdrawal from Gabby's account made after her last known call. The transaction was flagged as unauthorized. It gave federal authorities jurisdiction under wire fraud law, an entry point to issue broader warrants. Through subpoenas, they obtained text message metadata, location services, and browser histories. Slowly, the route came into focus. The forensic labs in Quantico began analyzing the samples from the van. Soil under the mats matched terrain from Spread Creek. Fibers from the mattress cover matched clothing found in Gabby's last Instagram photo. Every test built a chain of probability. At the same time, cadaver dogs were deployed in the Wyoming search grid. Late in the afternoon on September 19th, handlers signaled an alert near a grove of willows. The team marked coordinates and called it in. Word spread through the radio network, quiet but heavy. Possible remains found. Back in Florida, the news reached the Laundrie family before the confirmation went public. Neighbors saw blinds drawn, reporters pushing forward, police cars repositioning on the curb. The house seemed to shrink under the floodlights. When the FBI issued its press statement that evening, it was careful, consistent with the description of Gabrielle Petito. The confirmation would come later through dental records. For a brief moment, the noise online stopped. Across the country, vigils formed almost instantly, candlelight circles, printed photos, chalk messages on sidewalks. The case that had lived on screens for weeks had crossed into the real world. But inside the investigation, another storm was building. With the discovery in Wyoming, focus shifted entirely to finding Brian. His parents claimed he had taken a small backpack and gone into the reserve to clear his head. They hadn't seen him since. Law enforcement flooded the area with drones and swamp vehicles. Conditions were brutal, mosquitoes thick as rain, water waist-deep in some parts, snakes and gators everywhere. Each day the search teams returned empty-handed, morale slipping further. Still, they couldn't stop. The FBI wanted closure for both families, and proof that the story wasn't just a digital tragedy. By late September, the forensic report from Wyoming confirmed what most feared. Gabby's death was ruled a homicide by strangulation. The data pointed to a narrow time frame, between August 27th and 29th. Combined with the unauthorized financial transactions, investigators built their probable cause brief. A federal warrant was issued for Brian Laundrie's arrest on the fraud charge, a stepping stone toward greater charges if he were found alive. The spotlight, by then, had taken on its own gravity. News helicopters circled the laundry home daily. Commentators analyzed family body language. Online users dissected police statements line by line, demanding justice, accusing corruption, arguing about privilege and attention bias. Somewhere in that noise, the original tragedy, the life of a 22-year-old woman who had wanted to see the world, risked being lost. Agents knew that if Brian had truly entered the reserve, survival chances were slim. But they searched anyway, 30 square miles of swamp and woodland. Tips poured in from hikers and locals. Each false lead chipped away at the collective patience. Weeks turned into a month. Then, on October 20th, a park ranger found a dry bag near a flooded trailhead. Inside were a notebook, a backpack, and personal items. Nearby, partial remains. The air went still again, like Wyoming all over. Chapter 3. The Break in the Echo. Morning mist rose off the Carlton Reserve, thin and colorless, drifting above the water like breath. Investigators moved slowly, marking every few feet with fluorescent tape. The swamp was silent except for the steady click of camera shutters. A small perimeter had been established around the clearing where the dry bag had been found. Within hours, the FBI's evidence response team arrived. They sealed off the area, erected tents, and began photographing every angle. The skeletal remains were fragile, partially submerged, the surrounding ground soaked from weeks of rain. Field examiners labeled each item, backpack, notebook, personal effects, and bagged them separately. No one spoke much. The weight of what they might confirm hung in the air. The next day, forensic anthropologists at the Sarasota County Coroner's Office began their analysis. Dental records confirmed what investigators already suspected. The remains belonged to Brian Laundrie. DNA testing later supported the match. The autopsy report was brief and clinical, self-inflicted gunshot wound. Time of death, likely weeks earlier. The swamp had done what it always does, conceal, erode, erase. In Wyoming, when news reached the Petito family, there was no satisfaction. Only silence, tears, and a single statement to the press. We just want peace for Gabby. The notebook recovered beside the remains became the center of a new storm. Its pages, once dried and processed, revealed a confession. Handwritten lines describing regret, responsibility, and an attempt at justification that investigators could not independently verify beyond his words. The FBI reviewed every sentence, cross-checking with physical evidence and phone data. By October 2021, the Bureau declared the case closed. Cause of death confirmed. Suspect deceased. File concluded. But the story didn't end there. In the months that followed, the case continued to echo far beyond the courtroom it never reached. True crime shows, think pieces, and podcasts dissected the events. Advocacy groups called for new federal protocols on domestic violence detection and interstate missing person alerts. Social scientists studied how social media had both solved and distorted the case. For the public, Gabby's story became a mirror held up to the culture itself. How quickly the internet can elevate a tragedy, and how unevenly that spotlight falls. The phrase missing white woman syndrome resurfaced in headlines, forcing a national conversation about whose stories get told and whose don't. For investigators, the case remained a benchmark. It demonstrated the value of digital footprints, text messages, geotagged photos, and bank transactions as the new DNA of modern policing. Every movement leaves a trail, they noted, and every trail tells a story. At Quantico, during a debrief months later, one analyst said it plainly. We didn't solve this case because of one big clue. We solved it because every small thing mattered. The Petito family started the Gabby Petito Foundation, aimed at helping families of missing persons and victims of domestic abuse. They appeared in interviews, composed but raw, speaking about warning signs, control, and trust. They never spoke her name without a pause, as if it still carried weight too large to hold. In one statement, Gabby's mother said, she wanted to see the world. She did. And now the world knows her. Back in Wyoming, winter moved in. The valley around Spread Creek turned white, the cottonwoods bare. The pull-off where the van once sat had become a memorial, flowers, ribbons, small notes pressed under stones. The air there felt still, almost sacred. Rangers didn't disturb it. They just let it stand. The camera that had caught the van in the distance still existed on a hiker's hard drive. Every now and then, he said, he looked at it again, unable to believe what he'd captured by chance. In Florida, the laundry property stayed quiet. Reporters moved on. The fence weathered under the sun. Inside, the house remained a shell of unanswered questions. For law enforcement, the closure was procedural, but emotionally hollow. They had confirmed what happened, but not why it spiraled that way. The slow erosion of love, the moments of control mistaken for care, the silence that sealed it all. Months later, in a documentary interview, one of the original Utah officers reflected on that traffic stop body cam video, the one from August 12th. "You always wonder what you could have done differently," he said. She said she was fine. He said he loved her. We believe them. Sometimes you want to believe the calm because the alternative is too hard to face. The footage played again, grainy and bright in the desert sun. Two young people, both smiling awkwardly, both trying to explain what couldn't be explained. It felt like a scene from a film that no one wanted to finish watching. In the end, the investigation closed with a timeline, a statement, and a lesson too heavy for paperwork. Love, isolation, control, none of them leave clean evidence, yet they mark everything around them. When the FBI formally archived the case, they listed the cause as homicide and the offender as deceased. For everyone else, the file remained open in a different sense. The conversations it started about safety, empathy, and the invisible lines between affection and dominance. On the anniversary of her disappearance, visitors returned to Spread Creek. They brought sunflowers and painted stones. The mountains were quiet, the air clear. Someone placed a handwritten note that read, "The world saw you. The world won't forget." The camera of a tourist lingered for a few seconds longer, catching the way the light flickered across the memorial before cutting to black.